went to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took with him Peter and James and John and began to be distressed and agitated. And he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and keep awake." And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed that, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He said, "Abba, Father, for you all things are possible. Remove this cup from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." He came and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you not keep awake 1 hour? Keep awake and pray that you may not come into the time of trial. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." The temptation on this night is to ask after our own frail flesh, after our sin, as both are embodied in the pitiful and pitiable disciples. The temptation is to make it all about us because, well, it is. But tonight I find myself asking after God. How could it be, I wonder, when Jesus is distressed and agitated and in desperate need of a word from his Father, how could it be that God is silent? What has become of the voice that only Jesus heard at his baptism in Mark? "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you I am well pleased." Or the voice from out of the cloud at his transfiguration, addressed to Peter and James and John, "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him." One by one, those who had been listening to him abandoned him. Even the three who had heard the voice of God that day on the mountaintop when Jesus was transfigured, even they fall asleep, leaving Jesus to say to the only one who is listening, "Abba, Father, for you all things are possible. Remove this cup from me." Imagine here a pause. A pause that the sentence in Mark cannot contain. Imagine silence. Imagine only a tear falling that is the Father's love for the Son, whose destiny is now to be with us and for us in death, as he was with us and for us in life. Hearing nothing, Jesus prays, "Not what I will, but what you will." 3 times, Mark tells us, Jesus prays the same words. 3 times, God is silent. This is so hard to comprehend. God cannot, I repeat, cannot deliver life stronger than death. Why does he have to die for us? Because God has loved us in this way. Because short of death and resurrection, we would not know the love that is love, and death would still have at us. From Gethsemane to Golgotha, therefore, the conversation ends between Father and Son, according to Mark, until Jesus' one final cry, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani. Here in Jesus' cry of dereliction, God's complete assumption of our human condition, God bearing in himself our choice to live without God in the world. According to New Testament scholar Raymond Brown, Jesus does not question the existence of God, nor the power of God to do something. Only the silence of the one whom he now calls not Abba, Father, but for the first time, my God. Feeling forsaken as if he were not being heard, he no longer presumes to speak intimately with the all-powerful as Father, but speaks the address common to all human beings. My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Where is the God on whom the abandoned, the forsaken, the rejected, and the reviled? Where is the God that they call upon in the hour of their death? Here at the center of human history, God is hidden in flesh of our forsaken flesh. Precisely in our God forsaken forsakenness, God is. Not a remote and aloof spectator, or a non-participating director of this event, but rather, as Elie Wiesel so powerfully proclaimed in the darkest hour of God's seeming silence, God is here and hanging on the gallows. This is God, and God is like this. God is not greater than the Son is in his humiliation. God is not more glorious than the Son is in his self-surrender. God is not more powerful than the Son in this helplessness. God is not more divine than the Son in this humanity. So said Gregory of Nyssa. It is of this God that the crucified speaks, telling us that we shall not find God where we think we should look for him, namely in the heights. It means that we must be ready to be told by him that we shall find him precisely where we think we should not look for him, namely in the confrontation with and at the very heart of our own reality. Where each of us is stripped and naked, where each is suffering and perishing, where each is engaged in futile complaint and accusation, where each is alone. The lonely man of Gethsemane and Golgotha and say that in this place, even though I am forsaken and alone, I am not forsaken and alone. Since God in Christ has stooped down and come to this place and been forsaken there. There among the smitten and abased, among whom we would prefer not to reckon ourselves, God has raised his throne. What else can we say except this place of death is where God wills to be God with us? This man of sorrows is who God wills to be for us. Put another way, God is love, and love's only way is through suffering and death. Thanks be to God. Dear sheep of his own fold, lambs of his own flock, sinners of his own saving, I do not know all the hells you have endured or are enduring. I do not know the particular darkness in which you have dwelt or now dwell with no one to help. I do not know the rejection you have borne or bear this very night, nor the quiet desperation in which you, forsaken, have cried out. I know only him whose love, unlike our own, does not